Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Andy Griffin Show on this Tuesday, the 11th day of March, 2025. I'm Andy. Neil Walter is with me today. He is a state congressman. He is a part owner. I guess, I don't know, NAI is your company. Are you like a half owner, part owner? I don't know how that works.
Yeah, me and my brothers, yep.
Oh, okay. You own it with your brothers. Very cool. Very, very successful commercial real estate venture, and I did not know this. You were telling, Bart came in to introduce himself, you were telling you have offices in St. George, in San Antonio, what are the other places? Las Vegas?
Las Vegas, yeah, and also up in northern Utah and Lehi. We'll be headed to San Antonio this week to go and work on a few things with our team there. So
remember the Alamo.
That's right.
I'm actually from Texas. I lived about 40 miles from San Antonio.
For people that haven't been there, the Alamo is one of the best preserved historical sites I've been to.
Yeah.
And the trees are, the live oaks are some of the most stunning I've ever seen.
Yeah. And sadly, it was the anniversary 3 days ago, I think, Friday or Thursday, of the Santa Ana's army taking the Alamo from Jim Bowie, Davy Crockett, and those guys. So us Texans still, that still hurts a little bit for us native Texans. But anyway, Neil, thanks for coming today. I really appreciate you being here. And by the way, folks can't see him, but he looks sharp. He's got this kind of purple checked, not checked, I don't know, this really cool jacket on.
I told Andy I dressed up for the radio today.
And you look great. But unfortunately, only me and Stockton are going to be able to see you today. So, and Bart, I guess. All right, let's start real quickly about NAI. No, first let's start about you and your family. You're a native son of Dixie. You grew, born and raised, right?
Born and raised here. I feel very fortunate. Of my four grandparents, three of them were born and raised here, and in fact, I've got in my family, my family settled Santa Clara, St. George, and Hurricane, depending on which family line you're
in. Wow, nice.
So yeah.
And you're a flyer, right?
I'm Dixie High flyer, yeah. In fact, my son just is graduating this year. He was the starting center on the Dixie High School basketball team, and we just got his highlight reel yesterday, which we're pretty excited about.
I believe he had a follow jam, a rebound dunk during one of the playoff games that was one of the best dunks I've ever seen in a high school game in my life. That was amazing.
It was a great one. Took the house down. Brought
it
the house down.
It really did. I was doing the game on the radio, and I think I might have lost my voice on that play. That was pretty amazing. In fact, I saw Craig Hammer down in the media room after the game, and he said, that's the best high school dunk I've ever seen. So,
well, that's a big compliment coming from Craig Hammer. He's seen a lot of high school basketball games, and
I think
he knows high school basketball.
He used to could dunk back in his day, too.
He could throw it down, and he could throw it down with some respect in his day.
Now, what about you? Back in the day, could you?
I could dunk, but not like my son.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I could dunk, but mine was barely get it over the rim dunk. And some of those young kids like your son can really get up there. So very cool. It's sad Dixie couldn't have their season go a little bit longer, but you know they did all right. They ran into a buzzsaw.
Well, look, they made it to the semifinals. I think it was a fantastic season. I was really proud of the way that they played. Our Region 9 was represented very, very well. Hurricane also made it to the semifinals. And, those two teams that played for the championship, Green Canyon and Payson, are tough teams. But big shout out to Region 9. We had a whole bunch of really, really good teams competing in Region 9 this year. Crimson had a fantastic team. Pineview had a fantastic team. I mean, it was a tough region to be playing in, and props to those coaches and the players for putting on a really great season.
It was fun to cover them. Now, I guess you've been you haven't been able to watch as many games as you wanted because you've been sort of busy.
I missed a few. Yeah, I like to watch the games. It's they're a lot of fun. There's a lot of energy there. But the Utah legislature starts in January, mid-January, and it goes for 45 days, and then it's done. It has a hard stop. It's actually one of the best features about the Utah legislature.
Yeah, because a lot of people like to go to overtime. And not the good, you know, my wife is not a sports fan, but every time a game goes into overtime, she's like, oh, no. And I'm like, overtime, this is like the best thing ever. But my wife doesn't feel that way. And probably legislators don't really feel that way either. No overtime there.
Well, there is no legislative overtime in the Utah legislature. That's but, you know, one of the things I like to tell people is, government has a role. There's things that it needs to do, but it will take up as much space and as much time and as much money as you give it. And one of the things I love about the Utah legislature is it's constrained by this 45-day session. The budget and all of the legislation have to get done, and if they don't get done, then they wait till next year. And that's actually good for the residents of the state of Utah.
I think it is too. Yeah. You know, like you said, hard stop is, I think a lot of things in life need a hard stop that don't have them sometimes. So, Neil, of course, in the legislature, but you didn't tell me about your family. How many kids do you have, Neil?
I have six kids.
Six kids, mostly girls, right?
I've got four girls and two boys.
Okay. Yeah. Girls. So you grew up in kind of a girl household a little bit. I mean, your kids grew up in a girl household.
Yeah. No, and we love our girls. I started horseback riding with my daughters, and all of my kids like to ride, and that's been a big thing for our family. So
that sounds like Ron Reagan. And Ron Reagan loved to ride.
He loved to ride, yeah. In fact, if folks haven't seen the Reagan movie, they ought to go see it. A fantastic movie.
One of my favorites all time. Really good movie.
One of the saddest parts in that movie is the last ride.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It was a Secret Service agent that asked to be assigned to him. And yeah, that was a great movie. And I think it was Dennis Quaid played Reagan in that.
Did a fantastic job.
Amazing. I mean, got the mannerisms and the voice and everything. He doesn't exactly look like him, but he did really, really a good job. So, all right. As far as Dixie is concerned, as far as St. George is concerned, you feel like then, because this is where you're from and this is where you've lived, that you're pretty connected to Southern Utah.
I do feel very connected to Southern Utah, partly because of, you know, this is where I'm from, and we've got deep history, deep roots here, but also because, you know, both in my profession and also because of just the taking advantage of the opportunities. We try and talk to a lot of people and listen. During the legislative session and during what's called interim, meaning the time when we're not in session, I send out newsletters. Spend quite a bit of time trying to communicate with constituents about what we're doing and what's going on, and I get a lot of email back. And so one of the things I've tried really hard to do is to pay attention and listen to how people are feeling and what they're saying and what the important issues are for them. And I think that's helped me a lot.
Do you this has always fascinated me about public officials. There are the loudest voices are the ones that are kind of on the fringe of logic. The ones that are, I mean, you get a lot of, I use the word nut jobs, but I probably shouldn't on the radio. And that was my words, not Neil's, by the way. But how do you deal with a lot of the really loud voices that aren't necessarily representative of the people?
So one of the things I try and do is I try and listen and understand where they're coming from. But I'm also very careful about when somebody says, I'm your constituent, you have to do what I say. They're not the only constituent. And one of the hard jobs, and I mean this very genuinely, one of the hardest jobs is trying to make those decisions about is this representative of the broader group of constituents, or does this represent one view or one voice amongst many? And those decisions, that's the responsibility of an elected official. That's the responsibility to try and weigh those things out and then make decisions based on the best information that you have.
You have to really, I guess, sort through it all and figure it all out. Discern which ones are, like you said, which ones are really representative of your constituents, of the people that voted for you.
And, you know, I get a lot of email, and I get a lot of great email, and I really appreciate when people send email and say, hey, I live in Washington County, or I live in your district. And so during the legislative session, and even when we're not in session, it's really helpful to get those emails. But I also realize that there's a lot of people that care deeply about the decisions that government makes that aren't emailing or otherwise sending in feedback. And so I have to remember that it's not only the people that are emailing that care about the decisions that we make. And that doesn't mean we ignore or disregard those communications. It just means that they have to all be weighed in the context of what's really in the best interest for the residents of my district and Washington County.
So there's something called the Sunshine Caucus, right? And do you like that saying? And do you feel like that Southern Utah is overlooked, ignored sometimes because there's such a large population based on the Wasatch Front?
So I do like that because we do try and stick together. There's four representatives in the Utah House of Representatives from Washington County. Mm-hmm. We've got Representative Walt Brooks, Representative Colin Jack, and Representative Joseph Elison. Mm-hmm. And we do try to stick together on key issues for our county. And it's important that we do because when we look at the composition of the Utah legislature, 80% of the legislators represent the Wasatch Front. And so when you really start to look at the influence for making public policy, rural Utah and Washington County are, we don't have enough influence, if you will, to make policy without those individuals. And so we have to stick together and try and work together to make sure that the interests of our community are not overlooked by policies that are largely tailored to address Wasatch Front issues.
So do you feel like there are representatives out there? Maybe I represent Roy or Logan or West Jordan or Riverton or Heber City that have zero thought of Southern Utah whatsoever.
I don't think intentionally. I don't think that they're intentionally trying to ignore the rest of the state. I think what they're doing is they're seeing the problems that their communities are struggling with, and they're trying to solve those problems. And if you live on the Wasatch Front, they look like a lot like the other problems that other Wasatch Front legislators are struggling with. Right. And it's easy for them to see the issues similarly. And so we have to keep saying, I'll give you one example we've worked really, really aggressively on. It's homelessness, right?
Right.
And the way that our switch point solutions here in Washington County have made huge progress on this issue, and really they're the best model for how to handle some of these really challenging issues in the state of Utah. But because they have so many problems on the Wasatch Front, and particularly in downtown Salt Lake City, our solutions and our success get overlooked. And we have to be careful that policy that's trying to improve or address solutions in downtown Salt Lake don't undermine or hurt our community's ability, led by St. George City, to really advance the policies and the interests that are working in Washington County.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Education is another really great example. We have a great school district. We have mm-hmm. great charter schools here. We have some really great school options. We have fantastic teachers. But we have some real challenges that we keep facing on education. And so what I hear oftentimes is, oh my gosh, there were 70 education bills in the House of Representatives last year. What is wrong? What is going on?
Yeah.
And we're seeing problems that largely don't exist in Washington County. Right. But we're having to deal with these issues because of what's happening on the Wasatch Front. And that requires our local school district and our charter schools to go through creating new policies and making adaptations really that are designed to accommodate problems that we are struggling with a Wasatch Front school district.
Okay. There are a couple of things that have come up in the legislature in recent times that I think a lot of Southern Utahns are like, I don't care. You know, the Great Salt Lake and the fact that the Great Salt Lake is shrinking. And the other one was they're talking about money for ballparks up in the Wasatch Front. And I think a lot of Southern Utahns are like, why should I have to pay or even suffer or even listen to all this stuff when they don't pertain to me? Any thoughts on those?
Yeah, let me take the Great Salt Lake for just a moment. You know, the Great Salt Lake is in different drainage and it doesn't impact Washington County. But particularly when the narrative and the discussion around what to do with the Great Salt Lake really ramped up 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's really important for our residents to know is that the state supported the new plan for reuse of water in Washington County. And so what that means is that there's huge investments in Washington County being made by the state of Utah that will benefit Washington County residents that don't necessarily benefit Wasatch Front residents. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about it in that kind of a context, certainly we're not directly impacted by the Great Salt Lake and some of those issues, but just as the Wasatch Front and the state of Utah collectively are making investments in our water infrastructure to support our community. Hmm. The state is making investments in water infrastructure that's really important to the 2.5 million residents on the Wasatch Front and their water future. And so the state can do that, and I think that that's an appropriate one. If we could, I want to talk specifically about baseball, because I think that that's one that's come up a number of times. And frankly, it, in a different way, came up again this session. So let me talk about what that actually means. So when the discussion started around baseball, the question was, we have a massive amount of redevelopment that needs to happen in downtown Salt Lake City. This [S2] Right. [S1] Was specifically around the Delta Center, and they call this the capital city redevelopment zone. And then they created a Fair Park one, which is the baseball. But what they were really trying to do is take some areas that needed some investment to go in there. And how do you structure the financing of these things when there's a public good or a public benefit? And what we said in the House of Representatives was we were absolutely opposed to a statewide tax. And our local representatives, along with some others, we built a coalition in the House and said, look, we're willing to support these Salt Lake County projects, but not with a statewide tax. And we got rid of that statewide tax. And that was actually really good.
Yeah.
Those issues came through again this year because they're working on the convention center in Salt Lake City, the Salt Palace. It's a county-owned convention center. Many people don't know that. But anyway, with that county-owned convention center, again, the question is how do we get those financed? And we were very careful, again, to make sure that the financing was coming through taxes that were in the county and in the area that was going to benefit,
right,
not the county's or statewide taxes that would impact residents in Washington County. So we've been very careful about making sure that the tax revenue that's generated to support these kind of projects is coming from the communities who will benefit from them.
I think that a lot of people are like that. Things that maybe you were pretty passionate about this last session. Tell us the first couple. I do have a break coming up in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, very good. So let me give you a couple that I want to talk personal to me I was very passionate about. And I ended up running legislation on. So the first one is, it's actually a really fun bill, but it is I think a really important bill for our residents in the state of Utah. It was a food labeling bill. The origination for the food labeling bill came from this new emerging marketplace for cultured meat products. So think about lab-grown beef or pork or chicken. We didn't want people selling it in the grocery store without consumers knowing what it was. Okay. And so we passed a bill, passed unanimously in the House and the Senate, and it very simply said, if you're going to sell either lab-grown substitutes for beef, chicken, pork, seafood, etc., or plant-based substitutes, or, interestingly, insect-based substitutes... Ooh. You have to tell the public. You have to label it.
We need a label on it.
We need a label on it. There's a very easy way to think about this. For years, we've been going to the grocery store, and you can buy imitation crab or you can buy real crab.
Right.
And nobody minds having the option to buy imitation crab. You just don't want to be buying imitation crab thinking that it's real crab.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And all we're doing is making sure that beef, chicken, pork, and then, again, fish, seafood – that as these substitutes proliferate, we're not banning the substitutes. We're making sure that consumers know what they're consuming so that they can make a choice. So that was the first one. Very simple one, but really important policy, I think, for people. Second one, a big issue for Southern Utah has been short-term rentals. And there's been a lot of challenges around short-term rentals for about 7 or 8 years. We worked really closely with the League of Cities and Towns, VRBO, Airbnb. So really two very different views to craft a policy that ended up getting us to a really good place, which essentially says that if you're in a neighborhood where short-term rentals are prohibited, the city can essentially enforce that zoning. But if you're in a place where short-term rentals are approved, then that approved use is protected. And we worked out a really great balance, again, passed unanimously in the House, almost unanimously in the Senate. But we got to a place where we were able to really say, look, this is a way forward that protects our neighborhoods, protects our residents. It's good housing policy. If we've built houses for people to live in, then we don't want them converted into hospitality units. Right. And then we have places that are set aside for that option where they can be used as hospitality units, and that was a big one. Let me give you one other one that I think was a really important one. I've got a few, but another one was we worked really hard to clarify some of the legislation around homeowners associations. And what we're really trying to do here is protect members and member rights. There's certain things in a homeowners association that if you live in a neighborhood that's an HOA, we want to make sure that the HOA can't become overbearing and take away your property rights. And so mm-hmm. we clarified some of the rules about what a homeowners association board and management company can and can't do to make sure that we're really trying to focus on member rights. And that included setting up an office of the ombudsman so that if you felt like that the homeowners association was violating your rights, at least as outlined in state law, you could go to that. You could go to the office of the ombudsman and ask for a ruling to help get that clarified and allow you to preserve your property rights.
If you've ever lived in a neighborhood that has an HOA, it can be challenging. I remember one neighborhood we lived in years ago. You had to have a special shed for your trash cans. They could not be, nobody could, you either had to put them in your backyard or you had to have a shed covering them because they thought that was, I guess, no pun intended, trashy looking. And, and they were putting liens on people's houses and stuff if they didn't have their trash cans covered up. So, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of HOAs. Some of them you pay $25 a month. Some of them you pay $400 a month. And it depends on what they offer and how much you're willing to pay. But I'm glad we have legislation addressing that.
Well, and what we wanted to make sure is that things like gardens were permitted. They couldn't be prohibited. We wanted to make sure that certain types of political signs and flags that couldn't be prohibited. We wanted to make sure that you couldn't be charged a fee that wasn't disclosed to you. We wanted to make sure that there's certain documents, whether, you know, CCNRs, the rules, budgets, financials, minutes for meetings. If you're a member, like these things can't be withheld from you. You have a right to these things as a member of that association.
Yeah,
so we just wanted to make sure it was clear that there's certain rights that a member has. The other thing we did is we capped fees. We ran into one homeowners association that was charging 330% annual interest on late fees.
Oh, man.
We just said, look, this isn't okay. You can't do this to people. It's not fair to them. And so we capped some of those fees. But anyway, very good bill.
Very good bill. All right. Got to get a break in. Neil Walter is on the program today. I did want to talk when we come back a little bit about NAI and what that is and what you do and your day job. And I guess you've had to kind of step back from that a little bit while you were in session. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Right now, weather break here on the Andy Griffin Show.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. Neil Walter is here with me. Neil, you've been at state legislature for, what was it, 45 days, right?
And 45 days.
How did you run NAI, which is a commercial real estate company. Did it suffer? Were you able? I mean, obviously you have duties you have to do on a daily basis, but you couldn't do them for a while.
Yeah, so I try and keep up with some of my email and clients and et cetera, but I'm really fortunate. My brother John Walter is the one that runs day-to-day for the NAI operation, and so he's able to keep us rolling. And my brother Matt is responsible for all of our technology and marketing, and so we're able to keep rolling and just keep taking care of our clients. In fact, while I was out, we got our real estate market outlook published. It's on our website. People can download if they want to know what's going on in commercial real estate markets. All the details are there. Rents, vacancy rates, new projects, all the details.
Very cool. By the way, St. George, I think 2% unoccupied rate in commercial real estate is, that's pretty much full, because basically when something goes empty, something fills up right away. You guys are doing a great job there.
Yeah, our leasing market is really tight. A lot of, you know, one of the challenges we have, it actually is a challenge when new businesses, people say, I want to start a business, I want to relocate a business to St. George, finding space isn't easy.
No.
And it's something that, on one hand, we don't like vacancy because that, you know, that implies some kind of softness or whatever. But if you don't have a place for people to move into when they want to grow or expand their business, then that actually holds back employment opportunities and, which some of the good things that happen for our community.
Neil, of course, is a state legislator, a congressman for the state of Utah. I know there's some things you're pretty excited about. You mentioned tax cuts a little bit. Tell me what's on your mind there.
Yeah, no, I wanted to talk about tax cuts. I think that it's important for our residents here in Washington County to know that we've been working really hard to make sure that we're getting them as much of their money back as possible. As a principle, as a way to think about this, Andy, the government is going to consume all resources that are in front of it. So if you want to keep the size of state government under control, the way that you do that is you actually take away its revenue, because the state has to balance its budget. It's not like the federal government. And so when you cut taxes, you're doing two really good things. The first one is you're giving money back to the residents.
Yay,
that's awesome, right? The second one is you are actually restraining the size and scope of state government. So let me give you one example for our young families out there. Over the past, we've cut taxes 5 years in a row. But if you're a young family with two kids making about $75,000 a year, over the past 5 years, right, with all the policies that have come into play, you're now saving $1,275 on average in taxes. I think that's phenomenal. That's money that's going back into our young families' pockets, right? That's something that I think makes a big difference. One of the things I hear a lot about is Social Security and Social Security tax from our residents. That's been a big issue for them. We've now exempted the income tax on Social Security for households earning up to $90,000. So if you earn $90,000 or more, then you're going to pay a little bit of tax on that incremental income. But it's exempted all the way up to $90,000. We've been able to get that removed on income, on Social Security income up to $90,000. We're able to eliminate the individual income tax on military retirement pay, which I think is a big deal. And then when we look at state income tax, we've lowered the state income tax from 5% to 4.5%. We'd like to keep working that number down, but we're working it a little bit at a time. But cumulatively, we've reduced taxes by $1.4 billion in $1.4 billion, and we've simultaneously been able to support teachers and education, which is, you know, one of the big concerns is, hey, if you cut taxes, you can hurt teachers, you can hurt education. We've been able to support education. We've been able to support our teachers. In fact, we have increased teachers' compensation significantly. We put out a $1,400 increase in teacher compensation and another $1,000 increase for our support staff this year, and so we're able to balance those two things. And I'm really pleased with what we've been able to accomplish in tax policy by giving some of our residents their money back and then simultaneously slowing the growth of state government without harming some of our most important state initiatives, like, for example, education.
It's an interesting way of looking at it that maybe a lot of the normal people don't when we hear tax cuts, we're going to get a little bit of money, you know, maybe not pay as much or whatever, but to the fact that that's the way you control government from getting too big is actually a really good way to look at it, and something I don't think most people think about. I had a friend the other day, Neil, tell me, he said, man, now we need to get Doge to look at Utah, you know, and get a Doge in Utah, and, you know, the Department of Government Efficiency and Elon Musk. But I think that's probably you, Neil, and you guys, that's how you feel. It's our job to make sure that Utah doesn't become bloated like the federal government did.
You know, You know, this is a really great point. I've heard this a number of different times through the session, and they're right. We have to be vigilant in making sure that government doesn't grow out of control. Mm-hmm. We have two mechanisms in the state of Utah that I think are really powerful that have kept us from getting down the path that the federal government has gone. The first one is this balanced budget requirement. We have to balance our budget every year, and so we can't spend money that we don't have. The federal government really, part of the reason why they're going through this DOGE process and they're having to pull everything back is because they've been spending money they don't have. $2 trillion of money they don't have every single year. Right, so Utah's been constrained by that balanced budget requirement, and that's helped. The other thing is the legislature has got a process where every line item of every single budget in state government gets looked at every 5 years in a rotating, rotating period by both the fiscal analyst and by legislators who serve on the committee, on appropriations committees. So I'm assigned to higher ed appropriations. So we look at about one-fifth of the higher ed budget every single year. So over a period of 5 years, we'll look at every line item in the higher ed budget. And what you're seeing is all of these appropriations committees in this session, they all evaluated a series of cuts or reallocations to get rid of programs that are either not needed or they're duplicative. And so I wouldn't say that Utah's perfect. I think there's plenty of opportunities for us to keep working through this process. But I will say that the state of Utah is very far ahead of the federal government in being responsible about these fiscal matters, and it makes it harder for these entrenched governmental interests that are competing against the public's interest to get established and then have to be rooted out. We've been working on this for a decade now, and we've been very vigilant about it.
What do you think happened to, there are states in the United States, one in particular about two states west of here, that they're going bankrupt. They are not living within a budget. They're like the federal government. They think they can just spend. What do you think happened? Did their legislators lose their way somewhere along the way and say, my program is more important than the taxpayers' money? Or I mean, I'm asking you to speculate, but it's just crazy to me that some states don't even try to work within their budget.
You know, one of the biggest things is they say it's for a good cause.
Yeah, it serves a need. That, yeah,
and they say, well, somebody needs to take care of this, and so the government needs to step in. And I think that we just have to continue to be really careful in the state of Utah about saying, what is the proper role of government? Is this government's responsibility? And if it's not government's responsibility, then although there are things that we might care about, we have to recognize that there's only so much we either can or ought to do as a state. Mm-hmm. And that restraint is a powerful principle. It's a principle that protects people. That restraint of government is, I think, one of the most important things that we can really advocate for in coming decades that will keep us from adopting some of the policies that have caused a lot of harm in our neighboring states.
Yeah, well said. Can't or ought not to do, maybe, yeah, or ought to do. Yeah, I love that. All right, we got another commercial break. When we come back, we'll finish up. I did get a couple of texts I want to read, and you're always welcome to call 673-5890 if you have a question for Neil Walter, state representative. We'll be right back.
The winter's been dry, really dry. In fact, we're experiencing one of the driest winters on record. So what can we do? Simple, ease into spring watering. Start with just one lawn irrigation per week. That's right, just one. Think of it as giving your landscape a little sip, not a splash. Even better, let the Washington County Water Conservancy District pay you to exchange your thirsty lawn for a new water-efficient landscape. Visit WCWCD.gov to learn more about water-saving programs. The Washington County Water Conservancy District is a not-for-profit public water provider.
It's getting cold outside. Heating systems can struggle to heat all areas of your house, like your bonus rooms, garage, enclosed patios, master bedrooms, casitas, and more. Air Care professionals can help those troubled areas with their Mitsubishi Electric Cooling and Heating Ductless System, offering individual comfort control to a more personal confined space. Purchase a system from Air Care Professionals this month and get up to $600 off and 0% equipment financing options, OAC. Call 628-2423 or online at aircarepros.com. And thanks for voting us Best of Southern Utah 6 years in a row. Attention homeowners, has your heating system struggled this winter and you wondered what to do or who to call? Call the trusted professionals, Air Care Professionals, to help with those needed repairs, tune-ups, or heating system replacement. Air Care Professionals are locally owned and operated. With great specials this month and a local professional touch, you know Air Care Professionals and Bryant are doing whatever it takes to earn your business. Give them a call at 628-2423 or online at aircarepros.com. Thanks for voting them Best of Southern Utah 6 years in a row.
Perhaps the most caring gift you can give your family when your life's journey is complete is your final arrangements and expenses, lovingly organized and paid for. Cedar Valley Funeral and Cremation is ready to gently guide you through that process. In just a few minutes with the caring team at Cedar Valley, your final wishes are put in order. So at the end of a life well lived, your loved ones can begin to celebrate your memory without the stress and concern that often accompanies this tender time. Pre-planning and prepaying for your final expenses locks in today's prices for future services, so it's also a sound financial decision. With your final wishes prepared and paid for, commemorating your life can begin. Cedar Valley makes it easy for you now and for those you love the most later. Call them at 435-865-9000. That's 865-9000. Or stop by at 2086 North Main Street. Cedar Valley Funeral and Cremation is ready to serve you today. 865-9000.
For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes at Homes for Our Troops. And thanks to our donors and supporters, this life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back to the Andy Griffin Show. Neil Walter is with me today, state congressman. And Neil, thanks for coming, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Appreciate the time on the show today.
We got some texts and a phone call. Alan first on line one wants to talk about Lake Powell and the Great Salt Lake. What's up, Alan?
Yeah. 2 years ago, probably, there was a Yellow Cake caucus at the legislature. Phil Lyman had Randy Juliander there. For those that don't know, Randy Juliander was the state. Well, he worked for the federal government, but he, for over 25 years, he was monitoring the snow and moisture things for the state.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some really interesting observations on what could correct the water for Lake Powell and the Great Salt Lake. Indicated that 100 years ago, when he came in, the forest landscape looked totally different. There was a lot more quake and asp, and with the fire regime that where we started putting out the fires, why the conifers have taken over a lot of that landscape.
True.
And when it snows, up to 40% of the water stays up in those limbs and stuff, and it evaporates before it ever gets to the ground. Where in the quake and asp, the leaves die in the winter. All of that moisture gets to the ground. They did a study on a hillside, I guess, well, an area that was joining each other. Soils were the same. Everything was the same. The area with the quake and asp put out 40% more water per stream flow than that of the conifers.
Interesting. Hmm. So we're running short on time, Alan. Do you have a question?
Well, I just know, why can't the state look at going in and doing something to thin the conifers at the higher elevations is where he was trying to promote it. He says within 4 or 5 years that would fill the Great Salt Lake and Lake Powell as well.
Interesting. Any thoughts on that?
First of all, Andy, this is my friend Alan Gardner. Former county commissioner, yeah.
Really?
Glad to have you on the call. Glad to have you on the show today, Alan.
Oh.
Your question's a great one. I've actually seen a presentation that talks about this, really the consumption of water by the conifers as opposed to the aspens. I know DNR's looking at it, some of the state agencies trying to figure out what to do or how to manage that. But I think that's a big, I think it's something that they are considering and trying to figure out what the right next step is. And so I appreciate you bringing that one up.
Yeah, I know in his comments that the state was looking at a big chunk of money to buy agricultural water and put in back into the lake. And he says that would accomplish about 2 days worth of evaporation.
It's a big lake and it evaporates a lot of water.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anyway.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate you calling.
Uh-huh.
All right. See you later. I got a text here. We were talking about HOAs and some of the legislation that that you were a part of with that. This text says, about HOAs, I live in an HOA subdivision that is controlled by the developer, which is pretty common until they build out the subdivision. Well, the developer won't be finished for probably another 10 years, and they started 18 years ago. We have no voice as there is no board, and the HOA is just one person. Is there any way this can be remedied? I don't think an ombudsman can help here.
Actually, a great question, and the legislation that we passed will provide some assistance in that regard. So for those that are trying to follow along, when a new subdivision is created, the developer of that subdivision is in charge of the HOA until they're substantially finished, and at that point it gets turned over to the neighbors. We in the legislation, Walt Brooks was the one that really was pushing this and did a great job on this piece, but we want it from Washington County, but what we were trying to do is make sure that there was a time at which this actually had to happen, and we tightened up some of those rules so that a developer couldn't stay in control of the subdivision essentially forever. Now, if you have a very large subdivision that's going to take a long time, you're right. There's some. It's still going to take some time, but there is a drop-dead deadline, if you will, at which it has to get turned over. And maybe one other comment. While this doesn't directly address the control of the subdivision by the developer while it's still being developed, what it does give the members the right to is financials, governing documents, rules, minutes of board meetings, all of your key decision-making criteria, so you can at least be informed about what's going on. And we did tighten up. We didn't fully address this concern, but we did tighten up some of those transition timelines.
We had we moved into a subdivision. We were the first house in the subdivision, but it was only a 90-house subdivision. It was done within, like, 3 years. It was completed, so that was kind of nice because then, like you said, the HOA got turned over to the actual people who live there instead of this big developer. So real quick, we only have about 3 minutes left. More on tax cuts, Neil.
Yeah, so I think as we started talking about, we talked a lot about tax cuts. I think the big thing I wanted to talk about was we're trying really hard to make sure that the residents of the state of Utah are protected in two ways. Number one, that we're not asking for money that the state doesn't need, and so we're returning some of that money. The second one is we're keeping state government from growing more than is necessary, and that restrains the government's, if you will, consumption of money and resources in the economy.
Right.
I'm going to give you one very nuanced but simple example of this that I think is helpful. One of the ways that we see government growing is through new agencies that essentially create tax carve-outs and special, I think maybe an appropriate way for it is special deals. And we saw a lot of proposals for this kind of thing. We talked about baseball, for example. We actually had a number of proposals for new versions of this. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for our residents to know that our Washington County Sunshine Caucus, we were really effective in pushing back and getting a number of these things, a number of these types of governmental entities that essentially create tax shifts, getting them killed so that they didn't impose a hidden tax on the residents of the state of Utah.
Yeah.
There's one other one that's a big one. We had a lot of conversation about electricity and data centers and et cetera. And you think, well, what does that have to do with residents and tax policy? When a very, very, very large data center comes into the state, we actually changed some of the law to protect residents so that their power rates don't effectively subsidize Meta or Google. So Meta is Facebook. So Facebook or Google or one of these large data centers, because that's a hidden tax that shows up in your electricity rates.
Right.
And so we blocked some of those proposals to protect residents. We wanted to make sure that we continued to have affordable, reliable, low-cost energy in the state of Utah. We didn't want a hidden tax that was a corporate subsidy embedded in those tax rates. And so that was a big win for the residents of the state of Utah.
It sounds like to me, Neil, and I don't know you much beyond what we've talked about today and one other time we met, but it sounds like to me you are a champion of the people. You're trying to make sure that we're not getting sneakily charged for stuff we don't want.
That's right. And you know, that's when we talk about taxes and tax policy, government, that's really the heart of this, right? We shouldn't be paying for things that aren't government's responsibility, and we're trying to, where we can, get money back to our residents.
I love it. He's Neil Walter. Again, his business is NAI, Commercial Realty. And of course, he is a state congressman and up there fighting for us. I love it, Neil. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Great to be on the show today. Thanks for having me.
Out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. McCray Hepler on tomorrow.